it'll take me a few moments.
That's fine. Whenever we say come back to it, or
okay, is that okay?
Go on.
Sure. Yeah. So I'm not wasting time.
You're not wasting time. Good presentation.
I'll search for it.
So let's bring up the next staff report on this, Mr. Shinoda.
Chairman, Board of Supervisors, my name is Brian Sherman, Assistant County Office of Emergency Manager, Director, Emergency Services Director. So I'll mess with those names in the first slides. I don't want those ones. Just scroll through because those are that will come back to those. And then we'll go back one. One more slide. Awesome. Thank you. So I was brought on to this as a to help with the interpretation of fire modeling above and beyond what Cal Fire has already been using. So one of the things that we want to talk about, we'll talk about some model considerations on that Patterson Creek model. For the analysis that we're using, we use two different styles. We use the Finney model and then the Scott Reinhart model. Both are Forest Service type modeling that we use. Or have used, and they're both on very opposite sides. So Finney's a little bit more conservative, and the Scott Reinhart's a little bit more aggressive. So using the next slide, please. So there's some considerations continued. So the thresholds between the surface fire and some of the types of the crown fire, the Finney method of that uses the just lower crown spread rate and then the fire line intensity versus a faster rate of spread for the Scott and Reinhart. So just have that in your scope there before we start looking at stuff. So the first slide is going to be historical wind conditions at the Quartz Hill Raw Station, which is July 15th to July 30th is going to be the weather used. The wind that we used came from three different sides, so it was 135 degrees, 225, and 270, but we felt the 135 would be the most impactful with a worst-case scenario of 25-mile-per-hour winds. And then that wind direction is going to be, that wind direction and speed is both going to be for a static run. Go ahead and give me that next slide, please. With that, so this is going to be a 16-hour total run, and then it's going to be broken up into 8-hour increment, or 2 8-hour burns, 4-hour increments, or 6-hour total. Go to my first run. Nope, that way, sorry. One more. There we go. So this is the numbers that we used. Just a lot of data on there. I put that in there just so you can see the data that we used. Next slide, please. So this is the Finney model, wind speed of 25 mile per hour. So the red lines represent this the travel of the fire. Each color is going to represent that period of 4-hour burn. So as you can see, the little red diamond there off of Highway 3, that red diamond is going to be the ignition point, and then the rate of spread based off of those. They used a model that is conducive with the area, so a fuel model of 102, but a 93 fuel model, which this is not a lot of low numbers for you, but these are going to be more consistent with an ag field or a wet field, where 102 is going to be a little bit more of a drier field for that area. Those both match that area for the reasons that, A, they're irrigated fields, but they also butt up to timber as well in the Patterson Creek area. So, like I said, the lines represent the time of travel, or the route that it would take. So you can see where the Kidder Creek and camp there is. The concern would be the road.
That's the least resistance.
Yes, there we go. So as we move forward, this is our next model, same. This is our 102 model, so that drier model. As you can see, it does move significantly past the camp area in the road. Again, taking note that each color So there's that yellow, bluish, orange, and red is going to be a 4-hour period. Next. This is our Scott Reinhardt method model as well. Same data is used as before. So 25 mile per hour winds, 135 degree wind direction. And again, worst case scenario. So same scenario used in the McKinney, actually of the day of the McKinney fire. Again, you can see the path as Supervisor helps in the least resistance. It does take that path over to the road. Ignition is at Patterson Creek. Again, still the same thing. Fire starts same day as McKinney. So it's hot and dry those days that we run these models. Next. So same as the previous slide. Again, we ran them both with that 93 fuel model and that 102. The ag field, again, does show that significant push on the right side. To note that each of these are with no suppression and no barriers were used. The wind is at sustained 135 degrees, and it's sustained 25 mile per hour. Also, really taking consideration that the fuels are really dry and cured on these. So this is that, again, hard to see with that scale on the side. That is our model legend of kind of our different fuels in the area. The little yellow circle is the Kidder Creek area. Next. So with that, OES has made multiple recommendations, and as the emergency manager, we spoke with the Kidder Creek. So first, not on there, we have used our tool Zone Haven, and we've made Zone Haven. There was a little bit of the Kidder Creek property line that kind of pushed into another zone, so we just circled that zone in its own. It's kind of all within one zone now in Zone Haven. So looking at anything in yellow would be a warning, so anything close to those zones would be warning. Red would be an evacuation order. So a warning, even if it was touching the property, looking at recommendations for them to start the evacuation process, giving them plenty of time. The other thing, signage throughout the camp with colored signage as well as evacuation routes throughout the camp, which Ms. Worker will talk about, and then also additional like sirens, non-electronic sirens, like a hand crank siren, almost like an air raid siren, just in case if there's a power outage. So our recommendations based off of those models would be the 97th percentile day, which is a hot, dry day that we saw on McKinney Day, would be a above 97th percentile day, would be to cease all operations and start downsizing the camp. Anything in the 95th percentile day would scale operations to within camp boundaries and stage evacuation vehicles. Following evacuation plan guidelines as high percentile days are forecasted. So as we start to see these days are forecasted, as we know, we can see a forecasted red flag day or a forecasted 97th or 95th percentile day. So we can start adjusting it accordingly to evacuation procedures as needed. One of the big things, like I said, would be to implement those safety protocols, which in conversation has been done. The suggested would also be an MOU between Kidder Creek, Orchard Camp, and OES to really define the necessary protocols of that 97th percentile day and the camp's occupants. That would also be with local jurisdiction, state and local fire, of any of those red flag days. Again, I'm the emergency manager, and those are recommendations that I felt were the safest to keep that area into a make sure that area is complying with really what is the standard for basically all of Siskiyou County and enforcers. So pending questions, that's all I have on those models.
Okay. More questions? Right.
Can we talk about this one?
Yeah, it was in there.
Comment, I guess. I'm the one belaboring this, sorry, but the safety of the children at the camp of paramount importance to me. And in the CEQA box, there's not a lot that KIDR can control within their box in the analysis. However, there are external forces that drive public safety that are part of my decision. So in this model, why did we insist on this that Brad didn't talk about? This matches the fire behavior and very close to the ignition point for the 1925 fire, as well as the 1955 KIDR fire. History does repeat itself on the landscape, and that's why I insisted we model this to see what the potential was and impacts on public safety. With that said, I want to dispel one comment I think that was said by Murray Taylor when he was here talking about the catastrophic fire. I want to dispel that mythology, if you will. Firefighting have always called it a problem fire. Catastrophic has multiple fatalities associated with it and other things that aren't looked at in the modeling yet. Why is that important? Because I want to impress upon Peter Crick that we're not modeling the anomaly here. This is the likely occurrence 6 weeks every year in our neck of the woods here, and what we've experienced in the last 5 years with all of our fires along the river corridor and down in Jasper Valley.
Yeah, thank you. No, I think when we spoke about that, we both made that very clear that safety is the number one highest priority, not only for Kidder Creek, but for across our county. Siskiyou County is very large. We have multiple campers from out of the state, out of the country. And when this does happen, we want to make sure that we are fully covered and prepared for every outcome. And like Ray said, looking at the overall potential, because it has happened before. Thank you.
I have some questions of CAL FIRE. I don't know.
They're coming up next. Okay. So let's just finish with him. Okay.
So where, in that scenario, where is fire response, firefighters, where are they coming from?
So again, I'm going to let the firefighters speak on that.
Okay, that's fine. Yes. And then with regard to the MOU you talked about, what does that mean? Is that an enforcement document, or is it just a please be aware that we're concerned about this, and there's not kind of a mechanism to enforce?
So great question, and I'll probably grab a hold of one of these folks here on this as well. But an MOU really, and especially with Kidder Creek and their staff, they've been really compliant on what needs to get done. Again, safety is a major piece to this. Ensuring that the safety of not only the campers but of Scott Valley as a whole is very important. So that MOU would require set guidelines on what we want done, and then ensure compliance of those guidelines. And a lot of those are just a phone call, us coming out. You know, CAL FIRE has been an incredible tool on that with compliance as well, and the compliance officers.
And then the 97th, 95th percentile, expand on that a little bit. What does that actually mean?
The worst day, so every day that a great example that we can really put forth is the no fire day was a 97th percentile plus that. Anything that where we are all on the edge of our seats waiting. We have high winds. Haynes index is high. We also have winds. We have sustained winds, and it's hot and dry. The fuels are very cured. So those are concerning days where everybody's on pins and needles. Yes.
So, and if you can answer this, that's fine. If you can't, but let's take the mill fire as an example. That wasn't you know, how would that imprint look in 4 hour increments versus the minutes that it took place?
I'm not going to answer that because it's beyond my scope of.
Okay. Okay. Thank you.
Anything else?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Yeah, in regards to the 95th, 97th, I'm educating myself on that too. That where did the number 97th percentile? Is it because of past experiences in the county? Is it the state standard?
It's the national standard. It's used, correct? Yeah, national standard. It's used across when, and that's a red flag day. We're looking at the worst day. And it's not uncommon, as we see in summer, as we start to see that, especially in these last years, as it was drying out earlier, fuels were curing earlier, we started to see earlier 9% days.
Right. And in regards to this, was analysis given or thought given to other residencies along that road or along that path that may have to back away or something like that, as well as in setting the dates when we would take action on the red flag day?
So on a red flag day, really, with throughout the county, is I'm sure you've seen that come across news. It comes across alerts. Those are all days that we, especially as the emergency manager, that we're taking consideration. We're not pushing warning and alerts for potential, but we are taking into account through media, news sources, social media accounts that hey, it's a red flag warning. Red flag warnings. We're also going to start to see the PSPES. Happen as well. So there are multiple things that are happening, moving up throughout the before we start to see a 97th percentile or 95th percentile. Like it just doesn't, today's nice, tomorrow's 97%.
And then for an MOU, I have a few questions on that.
Yes, sir.
What would be the enforceability of it from OES standards?
So OES does not enforce. We have throughout our community development and Rick and his crew and throughout others. OES only can make recommendations, and we can make recommendations through CAL FIRE, through our local jurisdiction as well. We're not an enforceable agency.
And then in regards to staffing, from the county's perspective, this could be a question for CAL FIRE later on as well. There's a big county. You could have incidents, East County, South, everything at the same time, which can happen, as you're well aware. Do we have the staffing capacity to police this? Police is the right word. Monitor this as well.
So great question. Again, I'm going to stay in my lane on that one. And I'm going to stay in my lane and make sure that our fire chiefs can speak better of that. But I do know that life and safety is the main priority before anything else.
Yeah, just if we just have one project, we focus our energies on that. We can manage it with one year.
Yeah, unfortunately, we don't get that right.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. All right.
Is that it, Supervisor Chris?
That's all for me.
Thank you.
MOU. So, how do we create that to include their off-site program? When it gets to be a day 95th, 97th percentile, where are those people going to be? Is there going to be something in the MOU that says you have to bring everybody back to camp and be ready? Is there something that's going to say, you know, how is that up to us to decide? How is that going to play out as far as that MOU goes?
Yeah, so in my recommendation, that is part of it as we start to bring in operations. I'm thinking of it as, instead of that spread out operation, which would be harder to rein in if something does happen catastrophic, that we can bring those people in a little bit closer to make it quicker egress on that. So that is what our MOU would want to entail. And we'll sit down along with Haley, along with Rick, along with local and state fire to really build that and make that airtight before the season. And some of this you'll see in the evacuation procedures that Jorkin is going to be bringing up as well, that we help design.
Okay. That's all I have for you.
Haley, you got a follow-up to the answer of the question? That's it for now.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. So related to the incremental occupancy, this chart or this table is identified in the ISMND, so it's based on the 844 number. So currently, 3/10 the baseline. After 5 years, 450. After 10, 600. After 15, 724. And then 20, 844. And of course, whatever the occupancy ends up on, that can be modified to reflect it.
Can you say the first two again?
Sure. So the current is 310. After 5 years, 450. After 10, 600.
And that's off the 844 number?
Yes, because that was the original occupancy number, so that's what's going to be reflected in the initial study in the mitigated negative declaration document.
Would it be fair to, sorry, jump right in. Would it be fair to say that percentage-wise, it'll be the same percentage-wise change in 622?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Maybe not the same number, but the same percentage?
Right, the same percentage increment.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
What else? So, Ms. Kossel, when you say current, does that mean
that's
going
the
from,
baseline, the 310?
I know, but
number.
Are you saying going from 165 to 310, is that immediate in the first year?
Well, so the 310 is what's currently occurring on property, right? So that includes the 165 campers plus guests and staff and volunteers, which is that 310 number. Which is that baseline number that is used in the CEQA analysis. So that's the true number of what's happening on site right now.
On site now.
Correct.
So in the, you said something earlier with regard to going from 165 to 162, that includes staff and everybody else. But now I'm hearing something different.
So the 165 number back from the 1995 use permit, that is campers only.
Okay.
So there is no mechanism in the current use permit that speaks to, you know,
okay.
volunteer and staff
okay.
and all that.
But it is at 310 currently.
Correct.
And so, thank you.
Yep, thank you.
Anyone else? Cal Fire.
Good morning. Daryl Laws, Union Chief Cal Fire Siskiyou.
Good morning, Jake Burgess, Cal Fire Battalion Chief, Scott Valley Battalion, Siskiyou Unit.
Hopefully we can answer any questions that you might have with Cal Fire as it pertains to the Kidder Creek Orchard Camp.
So you don't have the presentation? Okay,
sure.
Greg?
Yeah, I got a couple questions. So on the emergency escape route, will the grade and surface meet the requirement to pass buses?
Yeah. It will meet requirements of Public Resource Code 4290 as outlined, and that would be a condition of occupancy. So that will be up front to get the permit, it will be to occupy it at the end. So it will be an inspection to make sure it meets the intent of 4290.
Okay, and yep. For the public, the reason I ask that is because it's yet to be designed and located, but it is required prior to any permit issuance. Will you or can you do defensible space and inspections around structures within the camp? The reason I ask that is because what I see in the camp that's most vulnerable are, I think, an area that's near the kitchen and with the sleeping quarters where there's some tent platforms and those kinds of things.
Yeah, we not only will, but we do currently. So we have a rotation throughout the county. We try and inspect 1/3 of the county every year, so that every 3 years we get, you know, 99% of the structures in the county. So that will be part of their normal routine.
Okay. I had a conversation with Dan Larrabee yesterday. He gave me a call talking about the THP that he's putting together for Green Tree thing, but it's not immediately in the structures, but it surrounds some of the structures in the camp. He also informed me that the funding for that is predicated on a CFIP grant through Cal Fire. What's the likelihood that that's going to be funded, given that it's probably lesser priority, if you do well, from a statewide perspective for that money?
And I'm unaware of the project until you just brought it up. But But I can check and definitely provide that answer to the board today. And as far as prioritization, we look at all projects within the county, within the area, within their battalions. As projects come to the local battalion chief, they are prioritized, and what is best for the community as far as protecting something like Garrett Culture Camp and those communities over at Scott Valley. Mm-hmm. So we always, those projects do rise to the top.
One other one, sorry. Because here in the CEQA box is pretty tightly confined and most of the threat is from outside, where I live, Partridge Pines, I understand there was a grant that was given by Cal Fire. Can you tell us about the progress of that? Because that would change some of this fire scenario.
Yeah, that's correct. There is a grant that's in progress. They are in the environmental planning stages right now. Hopefully that will be done by the end of the spring, early summer, and then we'll work towards implementation. Additionally, on the CFIP, that's the California Forest Improvement Program. That's actually handled at the region and statewide level. Our local forester, Jeremy Ravenscroft, has been in contact with the camp and has been helping them with that process. But as far as approval odds, it kind of goes on to the region level and goes from there.
And I would add, Supervisor Hopp, that we do make recommendations on all grants that are submitted within the county.
Yeah, I frequently get those to make as a supervisor, too, but this one I didn't for some reason, which I would have.
As far as letter support?
Yeah.
I'm not aware of where it's at in the process,
okay.
But I'll give you the answer today.
Okay.
Fire response locations, where are they going to be coming from?
Go ahead.
So, In the battalion for CAL FIRE, we'll be coming from Fort Jones Station. There's local volunteer stations throughout the county, or throughout the battalion, throughout the valley, and then the U.S. Forest Service, whatever they have staffed.
So can you go back to the one modeling picture? I can't remember where it was, but... So they're coming from Fort Jones. Greenview's right there, and just past Greenview is the turn into Kidder, right?
Correct.
So what's the interaction going to look like if that scenario takes place from those trying to get out and obviously fire response trying to get in? What's that interaction look like?
That would be up to the first initial attack IC to make contact with that camp, initiate evacuation warnings to the county OES, and then facilitate and coordinate with the camp to make sure that we can both get in and they can get out. I know that Andy has some stuff that's addresses that a little bit in his wildfire plan as well.
Okay. And the 4290, the two ways in and out, how does that apply in this case? Is the secondary road that is talked about in Patterson Creek Road, is that in place? Is it usable today, or is that something that has to be developed future?
It's still in development. The majority of the road is there in the easement, and I'll let Andy speak to that because that's a project. But
okay. What's the time frame that you would look at for response, worst case scenario, from Fort Jones to the site itself?
I'd say 6 to 8 minutes, maybe.
Okay. And has there been any vegetation mitigation recommendations from CAL FIRE on this project to date?
Yes, we have worked with them as part of their plan. They have a 1-year, 3-year, 5-year plan for not only ongoing projects, but planned projects and maintenance as well as rest.
And are those projects based on grants, or are they based on actual costs?
They're not distinguished that way. It's on the camp to work through those.
So let's take year one. If the mitigation recommendation isn't met, does it go to year two or three or four, or how does that work?
We don't really have a say in that. The recommendations only, we can only comment on Public Resource Code 4290 and 4291 in this regard.
So what's the viability then of 4290 if it can't enforce?
Can you restate that?
If you have a recommendation, but you can't enforce that recommendation through 4290, why bother? I guess is what I'm saying. Why would we?
I
even
think
have
it's
it?
Our due diligence to provide technical expertise to them to make it as safe as we can. Unless you have someone else in that,
but
you know, they need to adhere to the law. So 4290 is a law, and with that comes those regulations that are requirements that Supervisor Halpo was speaking of, as far as roadways, turnouts, percentage of grade, the two-way or the one or two ways in, two ways out kind of a deal, and make sure they have an exit route. So, yes, there is enforcement as far as they have to meet those that regulation, that law. Excuse me.
And the consequence if it isn't done, hypothetically, I mean, I'm sure they'd want to do it, but I'm just.
Well, for 4290, it's a condition of approval of the final occupancy of the permit. So if it hasn't been met, then we won't sign off on our final inspection. As far as 4291, which is the other element, the clearance, which pertains to the defensible space around structures within 100 feet, that's an ongoing thing that will always be addressed.
Initially as well, with regard to the permit?
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
So, Ms. Rogan?
So, if we approve the project without your approval of those conditions, they cannot increase capacity. Is that what I'm hearing?
Say that again?
If we approve today the project and the use permit moves forward without your approval of...
I think I know where you're going. So, and Rick stepped up here too, is that we work together with the Planning Commission, so they go hand in hand. They both need to be approved to work. Correct?
Yes, correct, absolutely. Rick King, Community Development Director, for the record. Specifically within the conditions of the use permit, these requirements must be met prior to issuance of the permit.
Okay, so there are still things, conditions that have to be met before capacity can be increased at the camp.
Absolutely correct.
Yes, correct.
Okay. So even with, I want to get my words right, not only do the ingress and egress have to be taken care of, but also the part about the timber, the other part of Supervisor Kopseff's comment.
Vegetation.
The vegetation. Is that correct as well? The 1-3-5-year plan?
The clearance standards for Public Resource Code 4291 would be the requirement.
Okay. So if they don't continue to work on their vegetation management, you would enforce that as well?
So in regards to 4291, the process is we go out, we do an inspection. They have a set amount of time to fix any or make any corrections. We come back out, we do a re-inspection. If those haven't been met, we go through that process till we get to basically a fourth failing inspection where we can go down the route of citation. Beyond that, that's the extent of our control over the vegetation management.
So that's citation, but not stopping them from...
So...
moving forward with the project.
Yeah, 4291 is different. We do it every day, right? We come out and do inspections all the time within SRA, within State Responsibility Area.
Right.
The goal is always compliance.
Of course.
We want people to remove the vegetation around structures so that we have a place to work and we can defend them. And that's always the goal. If we have to go to the citation route, we rarely do, very rarely. And sometimes the reasons for people not complying could be that they simply can't do the work for themselves, so we look for alternatives to assist, and that's through the Fire Safety Councils and different groups, and I know you've all been involved with those. So it's not a condition, the 4291 portion, while it would not be a condition of that, but the 4290, they have to meet that before the final signing.
Okay.
And approval.
Correct.
Yes.
Thank you. That clarifies that. I'll stop there.
So, Mr. Chris?
Just one question. The other residents along that path, there's consideration in studying this that capacity they would be able to evacuate as well if worst case scenarios.
So the question is if the other residents that are in the area, if they would be able to evacuate.
Yes, yes. Traffic volume and with anticipated future traffic volume.
So as long as the we're talking about Caribbean Orchard Camps,
yes.
They meet the parameters of 4290, that's really what we're here for,
right.
Is to make sure that they meet the law. And then that, of course, that's always our goal, is to make sure that, and we've always focused on that, is access. We want people to be able to get out of the way, and so we can get into the incident and suppress the incident. And that's always the goal. So would they, I mean, it's a what-if type question. The roadway, it's wide enough. It's a county road, so there should be adequate room for them to flee from the incident, from the fire,
right.
potential fire.
Thank you. I know I threw a lot at you, but it's just the potentials. Thank you.
Can we follow up here?
Yeah, through the chair. Maybe for Mr. Dean, if we could educate us on how we might be able to back up the those agreements into our use permit, so that we also have a county code agreement.
Rick Dean, Pima Development Director. At the board's purview, there are two options available to back up, beef up the project. One is under the conditions of the use permit, which can be modified to your will, and also things that are involving the environment, the mitigation plan can also be modified to address any concerns that you have to build it into. Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for.
Any other follow-up? Thank you. Is there any other presentations from staff?
Well, this is the appropriate time. I was going to introduce Andy Orkin for his PowerPoint presentation on the emergency evacuation plan.
That's what I was saying. That there's another PowerPoint.
Okay. Let's bring it on up.
I have a handout to go with the presentation. Thank you. My name is Andy. I'm the director at Caribbean Camp.
Andy what?
Andy Warwick, sorry.
Thank you.
And thank you for allowing me the opportunity to share about our fire emergency plans. So just a brief outline of where we're going in our presentation. The big question, we'll look at that. CAL FIRE, Sinkey County Office of Emergencies Consultation. Obviously, they've been here already and have been speaking to that we have been working with them, that we've been cooperative. Fire simulation modeling, just to review. Thank you. Prevention and safeguarding wildland fire emergency plans for Kidder Creek Camp, benefits to community, and conclusion. So the big question is, when the fire happens, not if, when it happens, will we be able to keep everyone safe? That's the big question. So we've prepared a robust plan. We've spent many hours. We've been working, doing camp for 46 years now. So this is not our first rodeo. We're not starting from scratch. We have had to do an evacuation in the past. I believe it was 2014. It was very timely and orderly. We did evacuate about 100, 150 people at that time. And so this is not our first go-around, but as we've been improving and having continued consultation, we've made some improvements. We also started with many online resources. The Red Book was a document that's used by Forest Service. That was recommended to look at the incident response pocket guide from the National Fire Coordinating Group. Those were all resources that we looked at in development of our emergency plans. So obviously those documents were helpful, but those documents are intended specifically for wildland firefighters, which we are not. Those are intended for people who are going into a dangerous situation, and our whole goal is to get people out of that dangerous situation if a fire should start. So preparation, we've had multiple, numerous conversations with CAL FIRE the Office of Emergency Services with Mr. Shinoni, including on-site tours. They have reviewed our emergency plans, and through their review and on-site consultation, they've given us some feedback. We've made some additions, some improvements to our plan. They agree that we meet the requirements of PRC 4290, or WIL, with the addition of the new road, outlined and defined through the EIR process. Our wildland fire emergency plan is a good workable plan for evacuation, and our safety zone for hunkering down is of ample size if needed in a worst case scenario. Just to be clear that we are in the CAL FIRE state responsibility area, and so that's why we went to them for consultation. Fire simulations and modeling, Mr. Shinoni has shared some of those today. Some of those look pretty scary, but I just want to point out that in those time increments, you're going to notice that the worst case scenario fire still takes about 4 hours from the graph there to get to Kidder Creek Camp, and that time is significant. Okay, so that's 4 hours to get to the road there approximately in the very worst case of scenarios in the ones that he showed us today. So we also ran some models with CAL FIRE under normal conditions, catastrophic conditions. Mr. Haupt, you've addressed that today. What does that mean? But that's sustained winds, one direction, static. Those, when I speak of catastrophic conditions today, or when we've been speaking about that with them, that's what we're addressing, is what's that situation that's not normal? They had to manipulate the system to make it meet those criteria. And then multiple and typical start points. And so some of those start points, we ran some from Patterson, from Greenview, from up in the mountains on the South Kidder Creek side, as well as on the North Kidder Creek side. And so we're grateful to be able to have some of those models and simulations to that influenced some of our decisions as we continue to beef up our emergency evacuation plans. So the normal conditions, some of the modeling that was run was based on the Shackelford fire that started last year and contained on August 5th. It grew to 31 acres, right? So around the same time, a couple days after the McKinney fire started, the Shackelford fire started kind of in that same time frame. It was a mid-slope afternoon lightning strike, normal weather patterns for a day in August. At the edge of the wilderness. The CAL FIRE has explained to us that that's kind of a normal lightning strike start, and that's why that was used. So under those simulations, using a 24-hour time period, that the fire would still be, within 24 hours, would still be more than 3 to 4 miles away from the camp. Right? So that would be similar to what we had in 2014. There was a fire, that I think it was the log fire, started behind the camp. We were in conversation with CAL FIRE, Forest Service. Once they said, hey, we think you should go, we went. go ahead. And then the winds, normal conditions with westerly winds, so kind of a normal wind condition on an August day, 3 to 8 miles an hour blowing towards camp. Using a 8-hour run period, the fire would still be 3 to 4 miles away from camp. Catastrophic conditions, these are sustained winds of 20 miles an hour blowing toward camp, depending on where the fire started. A 1 p.m. start on the South Kidder Creek drainage at the edge of the wilderness. Under these conditions, the simulation shows that it would likely take between 4 and 8 hours for the fire to reach the safety zone area. Catastrophic conditions simulation number two, on the north side of Kidder Creek drainage, again, 4 to 8 hours for the fire to reach the safety. And these are catastrophic conditions where they had to make the system sustain that one direction wind for multiple hours. The next one was similar to the ones that he showed today. These were CAL FIRE, and these were started in the residential area off of Valley Pines. Could have been somebody mowing their lawn, they hit a rock, fire starts, somebody on the road. Under those conditions, 4 to 8 hours for the fire to reach the safety zone area, depending on the conditions that day. Simulation number four, a fire that started in Greenview. To my surprise, this was the one that actually came up to our two-hour window that we are shooting for in our evacuation. Obviously, the creek runs through there, lots of rock, open space. That was surprising, but still within our 2 to 4 hour window that we're looking at for our evacuation timeline. The thing that Mr. Shinoni pointed out is that all of these simulations were done without any suppression, right? So there is no intervention. And in our worst case scenarios, we're looking at the Greenview fire getting to camp in that 2 to 4 hour window. All right, so that's no suppression. Worst case scenario, hottest days, winds blowing straight towards the camp, we still have 2 to 4 hours to evacuate under those conditions. So the conclusion, under normal conditions, you know, the normal August day, you know, where we're not getting into those 95th or 97th percentile days, there's ample time to evacuate, just like we did in 2014. Under catastrophic conditions, in all but the very worst case scenario, we have ample time for a 2-hour evacuation, and I'm going to demonstrate to you how we can get everybody out of there in less than 2 hours. The chance of those catastrophic conditions obviously are low. We know that they can happen, and that's why we're prepared if the worst was to happen. When suppression tactics and interventions are implemented, it just gives us more time. Prevention and safeguarding, there's been some questions about that already today. What are we doing to prevent fire from coming into the camp? So we have regular and ongoing maintenance that we do around the safety zone, around the roads, and also in program areas. So we're regularly doing thinning and maintaining those areas. We've been in collaboration with our neighbors for fuel reduction and fire break projects. We're working with our forester, Dan Larrabee. Sounds like he's been in contact with you through a CFIP, and we anticipate and are hopeful that we'll get some money to start on a project this May. We manage defensible space around all buildings and program areas and receive a yearly inspection by the local fire chief, and then Cal Fire mentioned that they're here every 3 years. Any recommendations from them, we act on those and get those things cleaned up. As they mentioned, we have a good working relationship with them. If there's anything that they've asked us to do, we've been willing to do it to help kids, keep kids safe, right? That's what we're all about, right? Is having fun with kids in the outdoors, but safety has to be the top priority, or we won't have a camp for very long, right? And so safety is obviously a huge concern for all that we're doing out at Kidder Creek here. Our emergency plan, again, going back to some of those Wildland firefighter books, they use an acronym LCES, and so lookout, communication, escape route, which we'll call evacuation, and the safety zone. So we'll look at those four key components. Lookout, there are multiple managed lookout sites watching for fire starts in our area. Doozle Rock is managed by Cal Fire, and that's the main lookout, which has a clear view right up the Kidder Creek drainage. All of our staff are trained in child safety and keeping the big eye. The big eye means that I'm not just looking out for my kids, but I'm looking around. What are other things that may be unsafe that I need to step in and address? One of those things would be fire. During high fire danger times, year-round staff maintain a heightened awareness and observation for fire risk as part of our lookout plan. Communication, we have apps downloaded on our phones, so we're tracking. We have county alert systems, which we would be contacted by Cal Fire, Siskiyou County Emergency Services, cell phone and landline for communication with staff on-site, as well as communicating with those off-site. An alarm system, Mr. Shinoni talked about that briefly. We have a battery-operated alarm system that's in each of the key locations, and as well at his recommendation, we also just purchased a hand crank siren as well to be used in case of an emergency. We also use Slack. It's a communication where all of our staff are on it, so we can quickly reach out to everybody on staff with a quick message through our cell phones. Just to be clear that if there is an evacuation notice, that we will immediately implement our evacuation procedures. We're not waiting for a mandatory evacuation. That is, if there is a warning, that we'll implement our evacuation plans immediately. So what does that look like going on to our evacuation? Our primary evacuation is down South Kidder Creek Road that has been inspected by Cal Fire, and we've also talked today already about the secondary ingress and egress, which will be built to 4290 standards. It will be inspected annually, and so it will be maintained to that standard. And we also understand that we cannot move forward with any, occupancy increase until that road is finished. So we understand that. We're in the process of working with our neighbors, which we have an easement on, and some engineered plans so that we're ready to move forward with that road as soon as we are able to. This is a map that's included in your packet there. This includes our main evacuation routes. evacuation contingency plans, as has been communicated to us by CAL FIRE, it doesn't always go how you plan. And so with the help of Mr. Burgess and Mr. Shinoni, we came up with some different plans to evacuate more quickly if needed. So that our alpha plan, that's under evacuation warning, right? And so we've got time. And so that's our main plan of escape, of getting out of there, is the alpha plan. Bravo, now we've moved into that red category, so now we're under order, so we're speeding things up. Charlie, the fire is descending quickly on the camp, and so what are we continuing to do to speed up the process of getting everybody out of camp quickly? And then Delta is obviously if an evacuation or the evacuation routes have both been compromised, we would shelter in our safety zone. Immediate actions, once there is an alert for evacuation, we'll use the alarms. We have a location with the church in Scott Valley at the Brian Church where we will go immediately upon notice to evacuate. Support staff, so the counselors stay with the campers, make sure that we have all the campers accounted for. We have clear plans of where they go, where they do their counts, where they go after that, down to our safety zone. From there, the support staff are going, they're getting the vehicles, and they're getting ready to shuttle our campers off-site. So again, Alpha, this is our normal evacuation plan. This is what I'm going to go through right now, and then we'll talk about the differences between the other plans. So according to the modeling, we have anywhere from 2 to 4 hours with those worst-case scenarios. And so when we built our evacuation plan, we built that with the 2-hour window as our mandatory get everybody out of here time frame. So within 30 minutes, the alarm goes off. The campers assemble in their program areas. They get a head count, and then they walk to their temporary refuge area where they will wait to be escorted off-site. Programs with vehicles depart immediately. I think sounds like many of you are aware. We have some camps, like Wilderness Camp, they have vehicles there, Mountain Bike Camp. They're getting in their cars and they're leaving immediately. We also have vehicles that we use for day trips, also vehicles that are used around the property. Our support staff are getting those vehicles. We're loading up and we're getting everybody down to the church as quickly as possible. Our outdoor day camp is evacuated into home immediately by on-site transportation. They have a bus that stays there at the camp while they're there. Drive time and distance to Scott Valley Brian Church, it's 8.7 miles, 13 minutes. Drive one way. So about a 30-minute turnaround to get everybody there, get turned around, and come back. These are our current vehicles that we would use for an evacuation. You can see that we have 121 seats on site to be used for evacuation. Our current program maximum, right? We know we have the limit of 165, but when you add in our staff, working with those programs, we would have about 216 people kind of working with those main programs during the day. So evacuation one, 30 minutes, they've got get together, walk down to the safety zone, and then they're leaving within 30 minutes. It takes 30 minutes to get everybody out of there and turn around and come back. So at 1 hour, we have 240 people evacuated, which exceeds our current number of occupants on site on any given day. So we have plenty of time to spare. So within 2 hours, all campers and staff have been evacuated to the designated off-site location. So what about the max occupancy, right? We're looking at a big increase. We're gonna double what we currently have. How are we gonna do that? So as our programs grow, we'll add a couple more vans to have around 150 that could leave on the 30-minute mark. With the programs that we have planned to run with our increase, some of those would include some family camps, so they would have their own vehicles there. The day camp, they also have their own vehicles there. So we're estimating that around 220 would be able to leave immediately in their own vehicles. So we have 150 campers that are in our programs. They're using our vehicles to get out of there. And then we have 220 that are there on site in programs, family camps, etc. They're getting out of there. And then our staff volunteers and guests, excuse me, they're leaving immediately as well. So that's, I believe, 420 that are leaving within a half an hour would be our goal. And then those vehicles, the 150, are dropping off at the church. They're coming back. at the 1 hour mark, and then our third evacuation at the 1.5 hour mark. We have everybody off-site with the limited occupancy of 622. So that gives us a half hour of flex time to still reach our 2 hour goal of evacuation. So with the max occupancy increase to 622, all campers are safely evacuated within 2 hours. Evacuation contingency plans, the Bravo plan. There is evacuation with fire moving toward the camp in an evacuation order. A couple of things that change here is there are no excessive personal belongings packed, and all evacuees will be dropped at a quick turnaround location if deemed necessary by on-scene sheriff, deputy, or incident commander, who will designate a hasty evacuation site. So instead of going 30 minutes round trip to the church, they may recommend, hey, here's, we're going to have you guys drop them off here, and then it's going to be a faster turnaround to get everybody off-site. Then at those locations, they would have the stage bus, which would, you know, take them to pre-designated evacuation sites as defined by the county emergency shelter. And then animals, in that case, are evacuated last. The Charlie plan is the fire is now quickly moving toward the camp, so no personal belongings. All vehicles are used and filled to capacity. We're getting a hasty head count. Again, we're using, at this point, we are using that hasty, you know, quick turnaround location, using the stage buses to take campers from there so we can get campers off-site even faster. And then the Delta plan is our last and kind of final plan. As Mr. Shinoni says, if we're using the Delta plan, everything kind of went sideways. Our job is to get people out, and that's what we're committed to. But in the event that it's needed, we have a maintained safety zone of ample size to hunker down in, and that's our Delta plan. That's kind of the worst case scenario. Both exit routes are closed. We're not able to get out of there, and so then we do have the safety zone, which we believe is of ample size, and CAL FIRE has confirmed that. So the safety zone, obviously our goal is to never have to use that, and we've shown under multiple simulations that under normal fire and even most catastrophic fire conditions, we'll have plenty of time to evacuate everyone from the camp in under 2 hours. Obviously, we don't know. These are models. We could run 1,000 more, and in some of those, there would not be 2 hours, and so that's where we would use potentially use our safety zone. In the event of the catastrophic fire when we cannot get out, CAL FIRE and the Office of Emergency Services has recommended that we stay put, hunker down, so they know where we are and they can send resources our way. The safety zone, there's been some conversation about what's big enough. The guideline that we used is the safety zone equals 8 times the wind slope and wind factor times the height of the surrounding vegetation. So on using an average of 80 feet for some of the pines that are around our safety zone, with a wind slope factor of 1, we need 640 feet of safety zone. With a slope wind factor of 2, okay, it's a little steeper, winds are picking up, we would need 1,280 feet. And there is a map in your appendix there that shows some of the sizes of our safety zone.